Infowars.com/show.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. I'm going to try to get through as much as I can about Iran here because I want to move on. We got fraud to talk about. We got the drama in the White House. Apparently, a screaming match before Pam Bondi was fired. We'll talk about what the heck's going on there. I just want to talk a little bit about what we do into the future, where we go into the future, because you know CPAC this year, as we've been covering, was basically a total dud. Not very high energy, not a lot of attention there. Speakers weren't even, you know, all that exciting. And yet, if you look at pictures from CPAC, what you see are basically Trump worship images everywhere. Just, you know, big bust with Trump's face on it, statues of Trump, like cutouts of Trump, Trump everywhere, Trump, Trump, Trump. And it's like, okay, but he's not ever going to be the candidate ever again. So what's next? I mean, he's not going to be president next time. He's not going to be running next time. He's not really even that big of a benefit right now for midterms. Really, the best strategy for midterms for Republicans would be to sort of separate themselves from Trump and go, hey, I don't know what you think about Trump, but I will do this and this and this. I will stop these things that Trump isn't focusing on. That would kind of be the best move for them. But it's just clearly it has been such a useful tool, being able to capture the MAGA movement by capturing Trump. And by the way, this is literally a CIA strategy that was developed by George H.W. Bush. We've explained it with the Eagle II document. And this is how they took over Japan. It used to be that if the CIA wanted to take over a country, it would try to sort of infiltrate an entire party. And then they came up with this. It's basically a Manchurian candidate. It's kind of where the Manchurian candidate idea came from. But it was just like, hey, you just get the guy on top. You only need to really get one guy. Get the leader and everybody else just falls into line. It kind of seems obvious, but you know, if you've never done, you know, this type of espionage, overthrowing entire countries before, you might think it's actually better to have like a big ground force with like a bunch of spies on the lower levels who can manipulate. No, you just need to go to the top guy, either blackmail or co-opt him somehow, and then you're golden. That's what they did with Trump, right? They have captured Trump now. They have stripped him and redressed him in their own image, and yet they retain that loyalty that people have to Trump because of the sacrifices he's made. BS he's been through as a consequence of his actually trying, at least in the beginning, to make America great again. There's a reason, there's a good reason people have loyalty to Trump, but it's not the sign of a forward-thinking party to be worshiping Trump when, as of right now, the future is not going to include Trump. It can't include Trump. He's done in 3 years, no matter what, if it doesn't happen sooner. So what's the next step? Where's the next path to go down? And I understand that third parties are a no-go, a non-starter here in America. I get that. I understand that. Here's why I would argue it's a little bit different this time, because I was thinking about this. Because every other time in American history that there's been an attempt to create a third party, it has been because one of the two main parties has a breakaway. In other words, you know, you can have people in the Republican Party that aren't satisfied with the neocons, so they try to do a libertarian ticket. And basically what ends up happening is the effect of a third party, like a third breakaway Republican Party, is that you damage the Republicans, right? Because any people that would be voting for Republicans might vote for you, and you're just going to hurt sort of your side at the end of the day. I think it's a little bit different this time because I think the outrage at the establishment is really universal and bipartisan, and that you're just as likely to get somebody from the left who says we need a third party as somebody on the right who says we need a third party. And I don't know if there's been a time in history where you could sort of equally harm both parties by creating a third one. I think that might be possible. And then again, the leftists will turn on you. The leftists are evil. They still think all of this dumb crap that, you know, is just completely nonsensical, which is why, you know, it's important to make these arguments in a way, I think, that explains people. It's funny because I feel like almost everything I talk about on this show is like, I don't even necessarily disagree with the aims of the people that I'm arguing against, but they seem incapable of recognizing that the so-called solutions being offered end up diametrically opposing their ultimate goals. I think you'll understand what I mean. In other words, I am an environmentalist. I do care about the ecology of the earth. I care about endangered species and preserving wildlife. Like, I deeply, deeply care about that. I care about that more than I care about a hell of a lot of other stuff. Like, I would significantly, like, so much, I care so much more about the, like, survival of some rhino in Africa than about the overthrow of the mullahs, right? Like, I don't know, God gave us rhinos, sort of unique, like, incredible creatures that can never be created again unless we do some sort of clone homunculi, which I'm not in favor of. So, like, should we not be preserving this stuff? I mean, the fishing fleets in China. The point is, it's not that I disagree with the left on environmentalism, it's that the left allowed themselves, like complete idiots, to be completely taken over and have every single environmental concern that you could possibly express all subsumed into the climate change agenda, which is obviously just an anti-human trick. And it's just like, okay, how can we not bridge this gap? We both want the environment to survive. We both have concerns about the pollution that humans are bringing. I just happen to place that blame where it belongs, on India and China and the poison that they're pouring into the food and water, or on, you know, the corporations that are manipulating all this, not cow's farts, right? You got to stop being idiots. And the reason I say this now and I'm bringing this up now is because it's exactly the same thing with Iran. I don't even disagree with the people that say the mullahs are bad and it's dangerous to have these bad people with the nuclear weapons. I don't want a nuke going off in New York. Guess what the result of this military action will be? Do you think it'll be less likely that they get a nuke or more? This is really what I struggle with, because it seems universal and ubiquitous, and it doesn't matter what side you're on. Same thing, you know, the debate we had with the boomers, right? We're saying this, that, you know, the other guys were like so anti-Islam and like hated Islam. And I was just trying to explain, like, but don't you understand that the whole reason Islam has any power in the West is because of the wars in the Middle East? The whole reason that Islam is a powerful force, the reason that hundreds of thousands, if not a million British girls have been raped by migrants is the direct result of killing Muammar Gaddafi. And they will even, like, acknowledge that fact and still think it was a good thing to kill Muammar Gaddafi. It's just like, well, then what are we doing? Then what is this? Our goals are not even misaligned. It's just you people are so easily tricked by bad actors that pretend to be champions of your cause and then just make everything worse for you and then double down and you never seem to notice. It's crazy. It's genuinely crazy. And I'll just go on and on about the climate change thing, where it's just like, yo, you want to save the earth, and somehow you've been tricked into thinking the only way to save the earth is to tax first world countries so Bill Gates can chop down millions of trees and spray sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere to block out the sun. Are you idiots? Here's an idea. Nature preserve. So have we tried that yet? Have we tried doing that yet? What the hell? How about instead of forcibly destroying the, you know, farming communities that have relied on livestock for all of time, how about instead of just going in and forcing them to abide by totally arbitrary made-up metrics, which are all just a excuse to shut down what has been a functioning and thriving family farm so it can be replaced with some sort of sick warehouse, inhuman factory farm situation. Like, why are we falling for this? Why do you people keep falling for this? So it's just incredibly frustrating. It's a constant thing everywhere all the time. And we'll see that here as we talk about the war in Iran. I do have a lot of videos to get to when it comes to this, because I agree with The Atlantic. By God, I agree with The Atlantic. I don't know what else to tell you. They're right when they say, maybe Trump should not have given this speech. And maybe this wasn't the best idea. Americans have been waiting for their president and commander-in-chief to address the nation and explain why the country is at war. For weeks, Donald Trump has offered only snippets and soundbites about his decision to lead the United States in another conflict in the Middle East. His primetime address this evening was, one presumes, aimed at informing and reassuring the American public. Maybe he'd have been better off not trying. Trump's critics, including me, have castigated him for refusing to go on television and provide a comprehensive explanation for the war to the American people. But given his performance this evening, perhaps he had the right instinct. His address did not come across as a wartime speech, but instead as a disjointed series of complaints, brags, and exaggerations, along with a few outright lies, delivered by a man who looked and sounded tired. After his 19 minutes on the air, brisk by Trump standards, Americans could be forgiven for being even more concerned now than they were only a few days ago. Yeah, President Monkey Paw at it again. And of course, his speech just didn't, it genuinely didn't make any sense. Like, on the face of it, especially he's bragging, he's saying that it's all done, but also we're going to increase the attacks over the next few weeks. Totally incoherent, obviously. But at the same time that he's saying that, you know, declaring total victory, I mean, this really was analogous to President Bush on the aircraft carrier with the mission accomplished banner. Which, look, actually, let me correct myself, because this is worse. Because to be totally fair to George W. Bush, that mission accomplished banner was not about the war in Iraq. I don't know if people know this, but that famous picture of George Bush on the aircraft carrier with the mission accomplished banner, that was like some mission that the aircraft carrier was carrying out, and they did achieve that mission, and so they hung up the banner. It wasn't supposed to ever be like, we won the war in Iraq. It was always misconstrued that way. See, I don't lie to you about anything. I don't like George W. Bush, but to be fair, that was never the case. So actually, Trump's mission accomplished speech last night, he really was declaring that the Iran war was over. Unlike George W. Bush, who had a, you know, unfortunate, you know, photo op that wasn't really intended, Trump intended to say mission accomplished. This was on purpose. This was by design. And it was just as ridiculous. Because as he's claiming that they've destroyed all of the ability for Iran to do anything ever, let's go to clip 43 here. This was a Fox News report about what happened last night in Tel Aviv, Israel. Let's watch.
Well, we've been watching the Supreme Court. Israel is being pounded by Iran, sirens sounding over Tel Aviv as a barrage of missiles hit the nation. Let's bring in Jonathan Hunt with more. Jonathan.
Kaylee, Israel in general and Tel Aviv in particular have been under almost constant bombardment throughout the day today. One of the most intense bombardments, in fact, since the very early days of this war. Just about an hour ago, we had an hour-long series of sirens. We watched as the interceptors were launched from this area at those missiles, which came in one after another after another from Iran. And this, remember,
all right, so mission not quite accomplished. Okay, maybe not totally accomplished, considering the fact that it was the biggest bombardment of the war so far. Okay, well, I guess, you know, if one of the things Trump said from the beginning was the war aim was to take out these missile lines, I guess that would be a failure. But that's just number one on the list. Trump initially laid out 5 goals for the Iran war. Here's where they stand from New York Times. 1, we're going to destroy their missiles and raise their missile industry to the ground. It will be totally, again, obliterated. The U.S. and Israeli militaries have destroyed many of Iran's ballistic missiles and launchers and airstrikes, but a large number are undamaged, and Iran continues to fire missiles in the region. In fact, the biggest fusillade yet was yesterday. Okay, so I'm going to say a big no on number one. Number two, we're going to annihilate their navy. The two militaries have destroyed much of Iran's navy. A notable attack took place near Sri Lanka in early March when the U.S. submarine fired torpedoes to sink an Iranian destroyer, the Iris Dana, which had a crew of 180 people. Initial reports said at least 80 people were killed. The ship had taken part in naval exercises in India and was on its way home. The United States had participated in the same exercises. All right, so yeah, we'll give them that one. They did destroy Iran's navy. Not that the navy was super useful, not that it would be a core component of their military actions. Their entire defense strategy is focused on missiles as the first layer, small drones, robot boats, or self-guided submarines, placing mines to stop the transit of the Strait of Hormuz. And then you have the infantry, which they have an overwhelming number of soldiers and a track record of success in defending their homeland, let's just say. But okay, but they destroyed the Navy. But they definitely did destroy the Navy. Well done. We're going to ensure the region's terrorist proxies can no longer destabilize the region or the world and attack our forces and no longer use their IEDs or roadside bombs, as they're sometimes called, to so gravely wound thousands and thousands of people, including many Americans. Mr. Trump here was referring to militias in the region that receive financial support and other types of backing from Iran. The militias are still active. Some in Iraq have fired rockets at U.S. diplomatic buildings there during the war, for instance. The most powerful militia, Hezbollah, based in Lebanon, has been attacked by Israel in recent years, but has not been destroyed. Israel has invaded Lebanon and signaled this year that it could occupy part of the south. And in fact, I believe the latest count, if I'm not mistaken, is 134 Merkava tanks that have been destroyed in the week that Israel has tried to invade Lebanon. So yeah, it's not going well in that regard either. And on top of that, you have Syrian militias who just yesterday declared war on Israel and are going to be bringing the fight there. And of course, Syria itself is collapsing into factional violence as the Druze and Christians are targeted with pogroms. So far, if you're keeping count, that's one goal out of three that we've succeeded in, that one goal being the easiest and most pointless one, the destruction of the Iranian Navy. Number four, and we will ensure that Iran does not obtain a nuclear weapon. It's a very simple message. They will never have a nuclear weapon. U.S. intelligence agencies did not assess before the war that Iran had made a decision to develop a nuclear weapon, but the Trump administration has pointed to Iran's highly enriched uranium, which the government created and stockpiled after Mr. Trump withdrew from the Obama-era nuclear deal. Okay. So we had to go to war to solve the problem that we created, what you're saying to me right now. And no, we have not stopped them from having their enriched uranium. And in fact, we'll get to another story in just a second that proves that, if anything, the ultimate outcome of this military activity will be that Iran will be more dedicated to having a nuclear weapon than ever before, likely with, an increased likelihood that they'll be able to receive help from this, from the Russians or the Chinese or somebody else with nuclear power. So not only do we not achieve number four, we actually did the opposite. And five, finally, to the great proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. Stay sheltered. Don't leave your home. It's very dangerous outside. Bombs will be dropping everywhere. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take. This will probably be your only chance for generations. Very similar to the Strait of Hormuz. Seize it. Capture it. Treasure it. Treasure the gift we're giving you. Sort of a different vibe they're sending out right now. If you want to know the truth, let's go to clip number 12 here. This is Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday. Let's see what he has to say to the people of Iran.
What I learned tonight, Iran's going to have a choice in 2 to 3 weeks. You either do a deal where you get out of the business you're in, or we're going to blow your stuff up that will allow you to function as a nation. That is your choice.
Well, let me ask this, because, I don't even think they have 2 or 3 weeks, Senator. That's 2 or 3 weeks when their infrastructure would be blown up. That's their electric grid. That is their ability to have any income. The lifeblood of their entire economy is oil. So that would no longer exist. Let me ask.
Okay, so that's just straight up war crime, terrorist stuff, right? There's no actual justifiable strategic reason why you would blow up their electricity infrastructure or water desalinization. And right now we are, it's kind of an interesting dichotomy, actually, kind of an interesting like paradigm that's operating right now, because we're bombing hospitals. We've bombed 600 schools in Iran, 600 schools. Okay. We've bombed the university in Tehran. We just bombed this, you know, medical institution that's existed for 100 years and was founded by the French. We now have Lindsey Graham, of course, echoing Pete Hegseth and Donald Trump, saying we're going to target their infrastructure, the basic, you know, functions of government that they need just to survive as a people. And you got to wonder, what sort of precedent are we setting? I mean, when you act this brazenly and in such callous disregard of, you know, war crimes, just the basic, you know, proper conduct of a nation. One of the main reasons you don't do it is because you realize that, like, hey, we have a lot of soft targets as well. We can't go bombing their hospital because they'll bomb ours and we can't do anything to stop it. So, like, let's not open that can of worms. Let's not set that precedent. Let's not give them the excuse, right? We don't seem to be concerned at that. Now, the reason Iran is not returning the favor in kind is because Iran recognizes, and you can tell this from the speech or the letter that the president of Iran sent out yesterday to the American people and to the people of the world, saying, we understand we're not at war with the American people, we're at war with your government, and basically we're on your side. Which, again, I mean, it's hard to even argue against that when you see the targets they're targeting and what they're doing. So they understand that, like, their best hope at this point, because obviously America is more powerful than Iran. There's no question about that militarily overall. Now, whether we can invade Iran, that's not a matter of who's more powerful. That's a matter of defensive, encroachment or natural features. Regardless, we're obviously more powerful than Iran. Iran is using the unpopularity of this war in, you know, to their advantage by doing things like writing that letter. And don't think I'm stupid. I get that all of this is psyops, but it's sophisticated. And what's happening right now is that Iran probably does have sleeper cells. Even if they didn't send people over here, they certainly have plenty of people in America that are ideologically aligned with them and probably could be easily radicalized or organized in some way. It probably wouldn't be all that difficult for them to do something to utterly destroy a medical center here in America. Smuggle a bomb in, start a fire, get 10 dudes with automatic weapons. I mean, it wouldn't be that hard. Hospitals are soft targets. They're not military installations. Anybody can walk in one, right? That's why you don't, you know, attack hospitals. But obviously, Iran understands the gain for doing a tit-for-tat, you know, revenge hit against a hospital in Iran. Yeah, Golden Dome. $1.5 trillion fiscal 2027 defense. But like, even that, it's not what I'm talking about, right? I'm talking about terrorism. I'm talking about somebody just walking into a hospital with a bomb strapped to their chest. You know, there's nothing the Golden Dome can do about that. There's nothing anybody can do about that, really, at the end of the day, without locking down the entire country to be a prison ward where every public place has metal detectors like Israel, and it just sounds miserable living in an open-air jail. But I wonder at what point it'll get to if the Iranian regime decides, you know what, maybe we do just need to make the Americans feel pain like we felt pain. Because right now, I genuinely think they're not targeting us, the American homeland, because they understand that this war is unpopular. If it ever gets to the point that they're like, it doesn't matter, we're gonna be destroyed if we don't do something drastic, you know, they might do that. And by bombing these hospitals, bombing the schools, bombing the universities, total callous disregard to the targeting of innocents, they are setting us up to take the blowback. They're setting America up to be the victims of blowback attacks that are totally unnecessary. We do not gain a strategic advantage by blowing up a hospital, but we do set a precedent to which they would be justified in attacking our hospitals. I don't want that. Why would you? Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies, the delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact? Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health. With Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at the Alex Jones Store.